I kind of expect that this talk is not going to be what some of you at least thought it was going to be. We have a little different angle this time that we want to call your attention. We are on the verge of serious problems, and it seems to be quite probable and quite true that civilization is going to have to begin with us. Practically every previous civilization has fallen. Fallen because of the lack of basic integrities or the inability to protect these integrities if they had been legislated into existence. As we go back over history, we are reminded of a few words in one of the old Sanskrit cosmogony stories, namely that the Great Mother, the Earth, has shaken a number of civilizations off her back already. Many we have no record of. They are completely gone. And out of them, one by one, came civilizations which we call past history. And history, as we read it today, is a long, painful account of the collapse of integrities. For thousands of years, the story has been the same. Every civilization has fallen from internal corruption. It has fallen from selfishness and cupidity. It has fallen from antagonisms and all the frailties of our emotions and our minds. There has been nothing really that has endured. And the greater part of our history that is interesting and enjoyable is the record of those brief spans in the development of nations in which they achieved their highest point before gradually fading away. The world's surface is scattered with the bones and ruins of human endeavors covering a period of possibly a million years. This situation has gone on and has been endured, and we have watched the things that happened. One of the interesting experiments which resulted in the motion of civilizations has been that peoples, finally disagreeing with their governments, moved out. Groups, minority to begin with probably, left the fold, went into some desert or forest or mountain region, and built a new civilization. They had hardly got it finished, however, before they were making the same mistakes as were going on in the world around them. They carried with them the elements of the difficulties which had taken them away from the parent stem. When the American pilgrims came over here, they came for religious liberty and immediately cast out Roger Williams because he wanted it. The only people that were really kind to Williams before he got Rhode Island going was the Indian, who had no understanding of the brilliance of our idea of brotherly love. It was the same. We had the sale of witchcraft, a monument to superstition and fanaticism and fear that had survived probably 8,000 to 10,000 years in the witchcraft of the old world. Everywhere we go, we find the same mistakes being made. We find nation after nation casting off a colony here and there, or going into some other region in hope of better living. We have it going on today in the Near East. We have considerable evidence of it in the Far East. It is rampant in Central America, and it is kind of shuddering its way into our way of life. The whole situation is an obvious perpetuation of a pattern of decline. A pattern that has always ended in destruction. The thing that has saved us in the past is that there were always a few people, maybe a colony or two, that decided to make a better attempt. And they walked out of the problem as the European idealists walked out of Europe and came over here to create a new people, a new nation that was to carry on the great ideals of the race. But there was a slight weakness in the pattern, namely that the members of the new ideal were not living up to it and never did. So here we are at the crossroads with certain difficulties that bear consideration. At the moment, there doesn't seem to be any very practical place where a new civilization can be started. There is no place we can go to now to start over again, which was the ancient formula. Civilizations were perpetuated, or the process of civilization was perpetuated by breaking away and starting over again. Always it was something new. The Medes and the Persians, the Greeks and the Romans, the early Christians and the Renaissance, the old world and the new. People were moving to leave behind their difficulties. Archaeologists are now tracing the histories of ancient people by broken pottery. And it has been well noted and written up by a number of authorities on the subject that the most useful way of tracing a civilization at this time is through its garbage. In other words, the refuse of that civilization. Moving here and there, or even semi-permanent, there were always piles of refuse, broken jugs and jars, broken furniture, broken and discarded clothing, all kinds of whatever it was that became the trash of the people. This trash was put together somewhere, and when the people found the trash pile was too strong, too big, or too unpleasant, they moved and left the trash behind them. To my mind, this is a beautiful description of political culture. We are reading and studying today what was in the trash pile of antiquity, but we haven't learned the lesson. We haven't realized that these records are all the records of incompleteness, insecurity, inefficiency, and lack of ethics. The Romans were not really destroyed by the Huns or the Goths. They were destroyed by the corruption of Rome. The Romans became so bad that nobody could live with them. They couldn't live with themselves. So they gradually faded away, but they had already captured and enmeshed the Greek culture, which more or less disintegrated with them. All of the old nations, Egypt, Persia, India, went through these periods of disintegration in which old ways broke loose, fell apart, old laws were inadequate, old codes of conduct were inefficient, and every so often the great reformer arose. In Persia, the great reformer was Zarathustra. In India, the first great reformer, probably, of great importance was Buddha. In China, the great reformer was Confucius. Each one of these, and many others, tried to call people to cling to the principles that were right. The wise man saw his world collapsing around him and could not do anything but speak out and try to save it. Usually he was rewarded with persecution or martyrdom. The great motion of the indifferent, the improbable, the inept, continued in its practical way of disintegration. So we have today a new problem, however. We are building a terminal type of mistake. We are building something that we cannot use the escape mechanisms that helped antiquity. We cannot go out into an uninhabited continent and start over again. We cannot even as individual countries start over again. we are in a position in which we come to what might be called the ultimate decision. Things have to be solved at this point. We have never been before on this planet, as far as we know, in which a human being could invent a destructive instrument that could depopulate the earth. We have never had a mass disaster. Continents went down, and other continents arose. Civilization after civilization vanished in ashes. But there was always an open front. There was something new, something possible, something achievable that helped us to be cheerful in the midst of our problems. Now we are in a position where every part of our fallacy has descended on us at once. We have inherited the mistakes of the past and built on them with considerable skill. We have more mistakes, more problems, more disasters, probably, than ever before hit the world. We have had wars and the rumors of wars since men threw rocks at each other. But in this century, we have had the two most deadly wars that have ever been fought by humanity. We have had all kinds of magnificent mistakes. We have done them on a big scale. We have done them so well that they've maintained the media for years now, newspapers, television, all the other media that lives on our mistakes very largely, and then makes its own peculiar mistakes, particularly in the fields of entertainment and education. We have not had one really constructive change in educational policy since the Ten Commandments and the Sermon on the Mount. We have had all kinds of schooling, all of it fatalistic, all of it intent upon perpetuating a civilization that has never really earned the right to be perpetuated. Now, this might sound a little dour to start off Sunday morning with, but there's a point here that we want to make. And that is, within the last 20 years, we have seen something happening. We have seen people beginning to worry, really worry, for the first time in a long while. We begin to see people wandering around saying something has to change. Something has to be done to break this, to change this, or it will destroy us. This is the first time the average person has settled down to this type of thinking. It's the first time we realized that there was no way out except to improve, and that if we failed to improve, we would be in very serious trouble. Now, the press has told us in the last 2 or 3 years of vices, secret and public, that were encouraged and manifested for centuries in the Roman Empire. The Romans were just about as dissolute as any people could be until we came along and topped it. And nobody cares anymore. Crime is the type of thing in which the individual has no respect for the lives of others, has no intention of becoming a self-responsible person. Escaping through narcotics and things of this type, he can look back if he wants to and see how every civilization that went to pieces did exactly what he's doing now. They are breaking the rules, and by breaking the rules, condemn themselves. Now, it's not in nature to destroy, and it has not been the intent of nature to create humanity and carry it down through a million years of various experimental activities to wipe it out. The end of the purpose of mankind was to become a people worthy of survival. And nature will continue to remove those who prove they will not work for survival. But nature is not going to destroy the labors of millions of years in the evolution of life. It is simply going to do what it has always done, clean up a mess when it can no longer clean itself. So here we are now, and we say civilization must begin with us. Civilization must begin with now. It must begin with the generation to which we belong. Some of us may not live to see it happen, but the work has got to be begun now. We must begin to recognize the values that are involved in survival. We must and will have to face the need for a complete house cleaning. We're going to have to get over superstitions that we have cherished for ages. We are going to have to get rid of ideas that we believed were real and never did have any reality in them. We must begin to understand that there is no such a thing as fighting our way to a state of peace, nor is there any way of punishing our way to the abolishment of crime. And there is no way of using materialistic education to bring a foundation for the kind of world we need. This whole pattern is simply drifting the old way. But this time, there are certain differences. One of the differences is communication. There has never before been a time when any average person sitting down at the breakfast table has been in the position to know what is happening in all parts of the world and why. We have, for the first time, the ability to judge the world globally, to judge it as the vast instrument that it is. There never has been a time before where the human being, in his advancement of social living, has had more to lose than he has now. The Romans had only the Romans to lose. We think now in the losses of continents and races. There was a time when we depended entirely upon one culture, our own, and killed half the race trying to maintain our own position. Now we realize that we are faced with a polyglot culture that has to be accepted. At one time, we did not tolerate any religious notion except our own personal one. We belong to the only true faith. This is obviously breaking down very rapidly, and the possibility of the recognition of a world religion begins to dawn for the first time. If we could get rid of religious conflict, we could stop half of the wars that might otherwise arise. So we are here at a point of decision. And we are here at a time when very careful thinking by groups of people, this is eminently necessary. And it is happening. We get literature every day here from organizations, groups, individuals, working sincerely and desperately to find answers to the problems. And the only resistance to these answers lies in the entrenched orthodoxy that exists in all realms, political, social, economic, industrial, and religious. We are locked in a pattern, but we are breaking this pattern in every direction. Now, some of this breakage is going to be painful, but it may be the breakage that becomes the beginning of a new world order. Actually, Nostradamus in 1560, writing his quatrains and sextains, which have become famous throughout the world, declared that in the last years, the closing decade or so of the 19th century, there was going to be the greatest upheaval in the history of the world. But he says something else that kind of takes the worst taste out of that. For he says, in the beginning of the 21st century, the Prince of Peace shall come. Now, he has been correct on so many points that it is not impossible that he could be correct in this one. He was correct in Hitler, he's correct in Mussolini, he was correct in Louis XVI, and many, many others. And there is no reason to doubt that he could be right again. That the Paraclete, the Prince of Peace, will come after the end of the present century. Now, whether this is to be understood as a person, or whether it is going to be a great wave of enlightenment, a great wave of integrities, which will allow the individual to relax and believe in truth for the first time, perhaps, in history, without being afraid of dismal consequences. Now, to get to the point of the matter, we do realize that public opinion is a very important instrument. The thing that has not been aroused up to the present time has been what might be termed the mass thinking of the world. This mass thinking has been largely dominated by conditions of survival. It has been dominated by economic pressures. It has been dominated by social customs and patterns, which have disabled it so far as a guiding force is concerned. But the voice of the people remains the voice of God. But the people have not spoken until now. One generation after another has gone down in silence, or has escaped into some political exile to nurse its wounds. Now, however, the world people are being aroused as never before. The probabilities and possibilities of a world union in which the despotism of the few will be made impossible by the integrities of the many. This is a world now in which the average person who has preserved their integrities in spite of the difficulties, or if they have not been able to preserve them, have wished that they could and would be glad to apply them when possible. That this pattern is building up as never before. It is building up in a way that must incline us to realize, or at least to contemplate, the fact that the new motion is not going to come from a specialized group of intellectuals. It's not going to come from those who have been perfectly content to allow the evils to continue, but have regarded the great task being merely to chronicle them. We are not in a condition to enjoy this type of chronicling anymore. We need work. We need actual achievement. It is no longer useful to remember all of the misfortunes of the past. It is now necessary to stop copying them and not do the things that have always been desperately wrong. Actually, you look around and see the situation. Nearly everyone you will meet today is worried. And not only worried, but with a subtle realization that there is a power capable of solving some of these issues. Now, all the way down through this same story that we're telling you, we must follow the course of religion, which has been a very important factor. Way back in the beginning, religion was very largely shamanism. It was just the individual worshiping ghosts and making sacrifices to ancestors. Gradually, religion, however, has become a great moral force. It has arisen in every nation of the world and has been very much involved in all progress. With the decline or decay of religion, the fall of empire has been greatly hastened. Today, religion is one of the most important factors in the perpetuation of the improvement of the race. Religion, however, has fallen into the same evils that every other art and science has suffered from. Religions have been divided until today. 6 or 7 major religions are having this serious time trying to reconcile their differences. The differences of religion are just as dangerous to survival as the differences of economics or politics. The great basic factor that the human being depends upon cannot simply be physical leadership. There must be in the individual a realization that there is a justice beyond the corruption that we see. There has to be in the spiritually minded individual a faith in something greater than himself and a sincere belief that this greater thing is going to be victorious. Unless we have religious integrities to support us, our troubles will increase. And in every nation that has gone before, that has had trouble, religion has been involved in that trouble. And as religion declined, or was, we say, exiled from the daily lives of the people, conditions got worse. Because the individual has only one ruler that is capable of dominating the common consciousness of mankind, and that is the concept of deity. But deity has been regarded as an interference with the ambitions of material tyrants. Deity has therefore been exiled, lest it interfere with the pattern of organized corruption. Actually, in the great emergency, however, what do? When we are very sick, we call in the doctor, and if he's a good doctor, he does all that he can for us. But if the problems get still worse and the doctor is ineffective, there's only one answer: God. We have to go to the sovereign strength that is beyond all corruption. We have to realize that the divine power at the root of things cannot be secularized. It must express itself in its own way, in a level above that of involvement in corruption and competition. Therefore, the story of the fall of nations has included the corruption of religion. If that begins to fall into line with the prevailing sins and crimes of the hour, man loses the last basic source of strength. There is no strength in the constant shifting sand of our present way of life. There has to be something that is stronger and greater that inspires us to survive and to rise above our present state. Now we see great interesting happenings in the world of religion. We are finding that the great forces of politics that have been determined to control by materialism alone are in trouble. It hasn't taken them 2,000 years to get into a difficulty. They've done it in 25 years. They've done it by trying to remove God from the human pattern, to remove religion and to claim that it is nothing but superstition. Actually, the way we live now is the ultimate superstition, and religion is our one hope of truth. Actually, therefore, the gradual motion of religion is now cooperative. Little by little, faiths are becoming more mutually understanding. There are still things to be solved, but the actual religious conflicts that we see today are part of a very educational process. We can see, for example, for the first time with certainty, that ultra-sectarianism is not only the cause of religious destruction, but of the destruction of human hope. The differences of religion are becoming painful. It's becoming obvious, perhaps for the first time, that average persons, quiet, simple persons, are beginning to realize that all religions are merely names for one spiritual necessity, that we are absolutely dependent upon faith when all else fails. Actually, Plato observed on one occasion that the end of all philosophy and wisdom is the building of faith. All wisdom leads to the realization of the presence of the divine power. Now, we are very carefully eliminating that from our way of life. Now, there were reasons why we did it. There's no doubt that the founding fathers were very much concerned about the possible domination of theology in the American way of life. We had a right not to become tied into one religion. But to have no religion in our own hearts is a very great weakness, and is a cause of constant corruption in our way of life. Therefore, we find that religion helps to build homes. Confucius tells us that the strength of an empire depends upon the integrity of its homes. That when the home goes, civilization goes. Well, the home is pretty rocky right now. It's becoming less and less fashionable to assume the responsibilities. But the homes that exist and have strength are the homes of persons who are not in the public eye as great or famous or ultimately wealthy. The faith is in what we might call the great majority of humanity, the kind of person that, as one philosopher said, God must especially appreciate because he has made so many of them. Actually, the home is another bellwether of what is happening. It is telling us, without our being able to really understand, that this great dash to freedom, in which we know no more responsibility, and that life is ultimate and absolute gratification of our personal desires, this has destroyed every culture through which mankind has passed. It has destroyed the individual completely, leaving him a victim of immorality, of dissipation, and colossal egotism. It has left all the world in trouble, simply because the individual is determined to live his own life in a universe in which there is a universal law that must be respected. So we watch and we see what happens all the way along. But we see two things that are rather interesting. Actually, at the moment, the two civilizations, so-called, alleged, that were devoted to atheism, can't make it work. Instead of it being the great liberator from superstitions, it has been the great enslaver to tyranny. It has been proved definitely that materialism can never dominate unless the inner life of man is wiped out. And, unfortunately, the inner life of man is immortal. And the only thing that can be wiped out is the materialism. Materialism is an aspect of human intellectualism. Faith is part of a divine endowment which we have all received from eternity and which will be ours to the end of the world. So little by little, all around, we see the signs of a great new order of life. We see the rise of virtue out of the worst drop in decadence that we have ever seen. We find more and more people objecting to the literature of the day, more objecting to entertainment as we have it, more objecting to vast expenditures for the gratification of human selfishness. Little by little, the facts are coming out. We want them to come out by diagnosis, not by autopsy. We want these facts to be available while they can be cured. Now, fortunately, we still do have a wonderful, solid core of dedicated people. They may not be dedicated to any particular belief, but they are dedicated to a better way of life. Good parents want to see their children with a better world than there is now. Every nation wants peace, wants security, and wants the right to live. Every nation, with its faiths, wants these faiths to be respected. It is not necessarily out to proselyte, but it is as part of its life that we should worship the same God in the words and language of his own race and people. But there is a tremendous renaissance coming on. We can see it all around us. Literature that was useless 50 years ago is now very popular. Books of idealistic nature are increasing in number. I remember going back to the days when the Boston Public Library refused to accept a religious book unless it belonged to one of the major churches. Now it is asking for advanced individual religious and mystical items. It's all changing. The individual is wearing out his own mistakes. He has wasted all the energy trying to do it wrong. And having wasted all this energy, he is tired of wasting, and he is too weak to keep on wasting. The only answer is a new vitalization of our way of life, a vitalization that is based upon the restoration of the integrities of mankind. Now, we can go back to the world of the past and seek these integrities. They have existed before, and all we have to do to find them is to watch carefully and find what was martyred, and we will find that the good things were the ones that were martyred. We will find the ones that were cast down by tyrants because they interfered with tyranny, and they are the things we should remember. We remember things that were lost to us because only minorities accepted them, and the majority swept over them like a wave and destroyed them. So we know that from the beginning, human beings have tried to think. They have wanted to do things better. And in every case, they have been blocked by internal selfishness. Now, as we go into a new age, however, there are a lot of people now who think that they are pretty nice folks. We're going to run into certain embarrassments also. We're going to realize that the changes we make and must make are not going to be always pleasant. We're not going to be able to continue to float around in a world of roses and old lace or something of this nature. We are going to face changes that may be difficult, and the only strength for those changes is within us. We are not going to be supported by society, which will probably be in much of a chaos for some time. But we must depend by making decisions in our own lives whether we are going to be true to realities or cater to ourselves. And this is going to be a decision that nearly everyone will have to make in some way. One of the ways will be certain losses or riotous living. We're not going to be able to break all the rules simply because we feel like breaking them, or because it's a little profitable, or because it's a little exciting. We're not going to be able to maintain a way of life that is completely without basic integrities. Also, we're going to have to search a little bit inside of ourselves and find out about these integrities and what they mean. Now, the average person probably has some pretty strong constructive moral implications in his life. He has internal beliefs, and if someone accused him of not having them, he'd come to the defense of his integrities with considerable vehemence. But there is another change. He believes in unselfishness, but he's going to keep anything he can get his own hands on. He believes in the brotherhood of humanity, except the relatives he doesn't like. All people of religious belief to get together in one happy family, but of course this is only possible if everybody joins his belief. So around the whole situation is a self-centeredness that is present all the time. The individual sacrificing principles for the satisfaction of appetites. This has become one of the great situations and has been carefully noted by Gibbon and the decline of the Roman Empire as one of the principal causes of its fall, is the individual doing as he pleased in violation of integrities. Now we're having also problems of legalizing these various integrities. And the moment we try to legislate them, there's tremendous opposition. The moment we try to prevent something from being wrong, somebody rises in righteous indignation and insists that we have the right to be wrong if we want to. Well, if we do this enough, and another civilization slips into oblivion, because it just cannot be run that way. Unfortunately, the facts of life are becoming more apparent. Writing in the field, entertainment in the field, more and more we see the traces of an improving idealism. We see in the midst of everything that people are changing their points of view. And we are also noticing that the entertainment field is receiving a great deal of bad press because of its own failure to maintain proper ethical balances and integrities. The average person is tired of being tired. He is tired of being exploited. He is tired of being corrupted. And he is tired of the idea that everybody can do their whatever they please and leave him in the lurch. So this attitude growing is like the little mustard seed in the biblical parable. The mustard seeds of good intention are beginning to grow. There is more and more emphasis upon the development of personal integrities. There is less and less acceptance of the conditions that we have known. The exposés of the delinquencies in education, in business, in policy, in sports, in everything, we begin to see a world that is simply honeycombed with corruption. It is something that never before have we seen in our time to the degree that we see it now. Now, the great hope of it all is that seeing this, realizing it, and perhaps being among those who suffer from it, there's going to be the strength to stand up for integrities and prepare for a new way of life. This new idea of a new way of life is getting into literature these days. It is being talked about. Organizations, large and small, all around, are building for the concept of the great change for the better. That there are going to be new morals, new ethics, new principles. That we're going to transcend competition, and that cooperation will be the power that saves humanity. Actually, the one or maybe two great principles involved in this, which we all have to face, one is personal ambition, which is the cause of one area of corruption, and the other is wealth, which is a cause of the other great wave of corruption. The individual must expect, therefore, to change his attitudes on these things and to realize that we are all here as tenants in a universe of potential beauty. We are going to be forced to face what we're doing. The air pollution problem, the water pollution problem, the loss and corruption of natural resources. All these things add up to the dynamic need for change. And we are not going to be willing to really change just because we should. We're going to come to it because we can't survive and can't live and can't stand the situation as it is. So the hope of a new generation of people, the hope that it's the children of this generation will come into a better world than we did, and will have a better way of life than we have known, that this is possible, that gradually various institutions are going to change their ways. Nearly every group that we have fostered as being so wonderful we could hardly stand it has now been mixed up into scandal and corruption. We are no longer able to be proud of science. We can't be proud of art or music or literature. We can't be proud of any of the achievements of the individuals, except in a very few cases. For the most part, we have to regret practically everything that is happening. And in regretting, we face a continual exposé of this material. We find constant use of false and fraudulent means of accomplishing any end that will add to money or fame. Well, most people are not planning to be famous and not particularly planning to be rich. But this pressure has moved legislators, it has moved cultures to make laws to favor the very things that are causing trouble. We are not trying to actually cure crime, we are punishing it. We are not trying to educate people. We are trying to make conformists out of them. And we see one great industry another going to bankruptcy. we find this tremendous surge of refugees coming into this country and into other countries also. The tremendous mixing up of peoples trying to find a way of life to survive. They are not here because they want to be rich primarily. Some do, no doubt. But they're here because they do not want to be murdered.